co-host. Lei Xing and I will go over the week's most important and interesting news coming out of the global EV, AV, and mobility sectors. We will open the room up at around the 40-minute mark to anyone who's keen to ask us any questions. What Lei and I discuss today is based on our opinions and should not be taken as investment advice. For those that are new to the show, welcome. And to our loyal listeners, welcome back. We ask that you please help us get the word out about this podcast to other enthusiasts. And of course, tune in again next week. My name is Tu Li. I am the managing director at Sinowatra Winsights, a global management consultancy that helps organizations bring innovative and tech-focused products and services to the transportation and mobility sectors. I write a free weekly newsletter that we pull many of our discussion topics from. You can sign up for it at sinowatrawinsights.com, which of course I encourage you all to do. Lei, good evening. Thanks for being flexible. Can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Hey, good evening. And good evening to a cruise hopping too.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I got to have some for you, right?
So Yes,
this is episode number 158. Well, this is your co-host, Lei Xing, former chief editor of China Auto Review. And this is episode number 158. It's March Madness again. And for those of you that watch college basketball, you know what I mean. But in the China EV world, it's March Madness every single goddamn week, if not every single day. And the mega, Li Auto mega madness, the mega mess, the mega misses continues. Maybe we should start there.
So this week, Li Auto had to adjust their guidance for Q1 because the sales numbers and for March weren't coming in where they thought they were going to. So rather than 100,000 units for sales for Q1, which is respectable considering that Chinese New Year is part of Q1 always, they lowered their guidance to 75,000 units. So partly weakness in its current lineup of EREVs, but also a bit of weakness on mega sales. Now, Lei, can you enlighten us on what you think some of those reasons for the softness is outside of the normal seasonal Q1 Chinese New Year sales drop?
Well, yeah, first of all, I don't remember the last time I saw, let's say, a public listed, let's say a startup, and there's only three of them, if we talk about the China Big Three, NIO, Li Auto, XPeng, issued a statement revising or reducing the guidance for quarterly delivery. I don't remember the last time that happened, if ever.
I do not either.
This is quite rare, I think. And I think it's Li Auto is dumbfounded because it was probably out of everybody's expectations, certainly out of their own expectations of how this turned out. But then again, in retrospect, the competitive world of China EVs, companies often like to exaggerate things, and Li Auto being one of them. And the case in point, when they say at the very beginning, before launching this, even revealing this model, that this is the best, the best vehicle of any energy type, ICE or BEV or PHEV or EREV, under renminbi, under renminbi 500,000. And when you have that kind of lofty expectations, I was chatting in the group, right? It's a case of the higher expectations you have, the harder you fall. And that's what happened to Li Auto.
Yeah, I would agree that they set themselves up for this, but also that they learned from the best. Li Xiang learned from the best, and that's Elon Musk. And with Elon, a lot of bold statements have been made, most of them with regards to product introductions, with regards to technology advancements for his services or his products and features, have not come in the timing that they originally were announced to have come, but also at the level of capabilities. And so It's a little Trumpy, it's a little Elon-y, but also Elon is non-apologetic about this, whereas Lee Otto, before the end of the quarter, are updating their guidance, which is a little bit unusual, as you'd mentioned. So, and all I can say is up until a social media post that compared the mega to a coffin, all I saw was pretty positive reviews and initial takes on the mega. So I think you and I think that that has, and this has nothing to do with their other products, the EREF products, but the mega not being as successful as they originally thought. I think that social media post plays a role because it basically went viral. And
it went south.
And it's been very, very consistent over the last few weeks. So,
and down goes our, or maybe my, prediction at the beginning of the year that they're going to beat BBA or ABB. And down goes that 800,000 unit sales target. They didn't explicitly say it, but it's obvious. I think that the expectations must be tempered down now that they put out this statement.
Well, now they need to start, and I'm sure they're doing this late. They're likely looking at price reductions.
Well, I would expect it's something that they'll play.
Yeah,
whether it's a direct price cut or not, from your experience working at, you know, the OEMs, I mean, from a supply chain perspective, this is like a huge swing, isn't it?
Yeah. So
because the suppliers, they have certain expectations, they prepared, and now to see this happen, it just messes everyone up.
So
doesn't it?
One of the important things that I think should be noted is that, to your point, Lay, OEMs are huge companies. They book hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue each year, selling millions of cars. And Li Auto, it's a startup, but still a $14 billion company. So it's a big company. Most Chinese, and we're talking upmarket, probably tier two to tier four, they're going to be in a third tier city in these small factories. And so they don't have the credit lines that a lot of these tier one companies do. So when Li Auto master production schedule hits their forecast, they're out buying raw materials in order to build to that master production schedule. So when the Li Auto is cutting their forecast or master production schedule or pushing out, sometimes you can't cut it, so you push it out, meaning that if it's a 12-week schedule and you're supposed to build 500 megas in week two, 500 in week three, and then change the master production schedule to say 200, 200, and then push those 600 into the later weeks, that screws up the whole supply chain. The how it affects the lower tier suppliers is you've bought 500 pieces and you were supposed to ship them in week two and week three. Now you can only ship 200. So that's 300 pieces that you're probably sitting on in inventory for a number of months or a number of weeks. Again, it might not sound like a lot, but when you are going paycheck to paycheck, that's money that you could have used for something else that you can't use now. Okay, that's capital. And so that's how delicate, when you move higher up into the supply chain at the tier two, tier three level, that's how delicate it is.
This Li Auto update is, I think, also a reflection of two things. One, the current economic, you know, headwind that China is facing. Two, how difficult it is to crack the BEV MPV segment. Remember, the X9 is currently the top selling BEV MPV, but models like the Denza D9, their DMI, the plug-in models, sell a lot more. So I think it's a reality check of how difficult it is, especially at that price point, right? 560,000 renminbi, which is what, $80,000-$90,000, is not what Li Auto expected. So that's why they're talking about this 0 to 1 as opposed to 1 to 10 jargon. I don't think the West really understand it. But
here's my question to you, Lei. Is there not a market? as big as Lee Otto thought?
There is.
Or is it there? Is it completely on the mega that it missed the market? That's what.
No, I think there is the market. There is the wrong expectations. There is the right market.
Yeah.
I think that's the.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. Because I do think, you know, even a small market for an MPV in China, that's going to be a huge market for MPV in any other country.
Because at the end of the day, Mega is not a volume driver. And the upcoming L6, which they'll likely launch in around the Beijing Auto Show, I think they're expecting at least 20,000 units a month for that model.
But you know what's crazy, Lei? Is that at the Beijing Auto Show, there are not going to be a ton of questions about the Li, the L6, you know? It's going to be all about what happened to Mega? What happened to your sales in Q1? That's what the questions are going to be.
Well, hopefully the Mega saga will be long forgotten by then, because there will be other sagas.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's always
likely from other automakers.
But so far, at least 3 weeks into March, it seems that Mega, maybe plus the Xiaomi SU7, have been the only two prolonged topics that have been really getting a lot of attention. So, yeah.
Well, Lei Jun has said, so they've been getting a ton of Western press to Xiaomi. So it's this spotlight can turn into a heat lamp if it's not managed properly. In Lei Jun this week, he admitted that there is a lot of downward pricing pressure for his SU7 or SU7, however you want to call it. And I was interviewed this week by, I forget what outlet. They specifically talked and asked me about the Xiaomi SU7 and what my expectations are. But you and I believe it's going to end up between $30,000 and $50,000. I was told that there's going to be at least three or four different models within the SU7, like trim levels, with the highest being over $50,000. So we will know next week exact pricing and complete feature set for all the vehicles, because they're going to begin delivering them, I think, which is kind of weird, because if you're a consumer and you generally don't know what the price is, why would you want to buy something like this? But I don't know. I don't know. Have you heard anything else about potential buyers and what they find out relative to the March 28th date?
But this Mega saga has been quite long, longer than I expected. And the sudden turn of narrative is also a bit surprising. But I guess not surprising given the current competitive environment.
Yeah, so...
And how narratives are artificially swayed.
Well, you and I think believe that there is some other powers at work that are keeping this narrative in the social media sphere.
Maybe, or it could just be a case of, you know, the writing on the hot, you know, on the tails of a hot year, 2023, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, and we, I mean, I expected, especially after the earnings call, that they're the best coming out of those others. They still are, but at least, I guess, not at the volume that they were expecting.
Well, so. And this just tells you the amount of pressure that's on each and one of these CEOs in this environment, not only because of the price war, because of the economic funk that the Chinese economy is currently going through. So there's macroeconomic issues that they have no control of. And then a crazy, crazy price war, because one of the sites that I look at that I trust is Jiri's site, the Car News China, and they always post all the new cars. And there always seems to be 3, 4, 5 cars every week posted on this website.
Yeah.
So
you know, there's another even smaller BYD model coming. You know what it's called? It's called the Sea Snail Hai Luo. I don't know whether that's English. Sea Snail, right? What the heck?
It's gonna come in at freaking Wuli Hongguang Mini prices.
But yeah, It's funny, you know, while so Wang Chuanfu is in the limelight with Tim Cook opening the newest store in Shanghai, right? And then William Lee is opening up his own channels, yes. Live streaming about the Anvo.
The interior size of the Anvo.
Yeah. These CEOs, I mean, they
and then XPeng this week, in order to stay in the news, announced that they are launching.
Dropping the bomb, right?
They're launching a mass market brand that goes below the current XPeng pricing.
I mean, what I wanted to say is that we've seen this story before. The latest happening to Li Auto Mega. We saw when P5 came out 3 years ago how much expectations we had for that model. We saw the ET5 when Chin Li Hong said, we're going to beat BMW 3 Series. And what happened? And now this Mona, and which in the earnings call of XPeng, I think Brian Gu really lifted that expectations again to very high, as well as Xiaopeng, you know, for that 100,000 to 150,000 RMB, this so-called AI smartification model for the young generation.
Basically, they're saying we're making ADAS affordable to everybody. That's what effectively they said.
Yeah. Then again, okay. it's difficult to believe, and now with the prices for the Xiaomi SU7 flying all over the place. The funny thing, you know, the latest funny thing I heard is they're launching on March 28th, which on the lunar calendar is February 19th, which means their starting price is going to be 219,000, and the top trim is going to be 328,000.
Jeez. which is
making
just under $50,000. So
yeah, but I mean, Lei Jun recently, he's come out again and again saying that we apologize that this model is going to be priced probably a little bit more expensive than you expect.
Yeah.
Could still be smoke.
I think it will be. To show that you and I are not picking on the Chinese EV makers, BMW, when they launched the iX and the iX3, they thought there was going to be tremendous fanfare. There wasn't until they reduced pricing. And even then, and we're talking quite significantly of their EV models. And then
$70,000,
$10,000. And then when the Tesla Highland Model 3 refresh was launched, I think Tesla thought it was going to really jumpstart some of their sales, but it didn't. So it's not just the Chinese EV makers that create these massive expectations. It's the foreign automakers as well. I think the foreign automakers have just been humbled to the point where they're pleasantly surprised, hopeful that the Chinese market gives their new products, new features, new services a warm welcome. But the Chinese EV makers, the godfathers at least, are still trying to create that sizzle. And the only one that you don't see in social on the Chinese side, really, among the, let's say, more flamboyant founders is Wang Chuanfu. So it's just nonstop, man. It's just completely nonstop. So,
speaking of BMW, they had their annual
kind
of the press conference today. And I want to quote, I listened in to the recording a little bit, and there was a question on China, on the EU Commission's anti subsidy probe, right? And here's what Oliver Zipse,
who's the CEO,
said. Yeah, the CEO. He said the European automotive industry, when it comes to the BMW group, is not massively damaged by the import of Chinese automobiles, nor is it in the interest of the EU to further impose customs. I think it meant tariffs on these products. So I think within 10 days, all three German Volkswagen, Mercedes, BMW Group, the three leading German automakers, have basically had similar messages. Starting off last week when Ola said to that in an FT article that he would actually have EU reduce tariffs on China EVs. and Oliver Bloomer last week saying that they do not seek protection. And I mean,
this is a message to the EU, but it's also a message to the German government, the German local government.
We can't forget the fact that they're all three companies, their biggest market are in China.
Exactly. So that's what I was actually alluding to. I was saying that this is a reminder from each of those CEOs that to the German government that we rely on the China market for so much from your largest companies that you need to help us fight the EU. And I don't think they are going to win the fight of no tariff, but I think they'll win the fight of reducing the tariff to something that's negligible to the Chinese EV makers. And this doesn't bode well for the Peugeots, the Renaults. Would you consider Smart a premium? Would you consider Mini a premium? You know, because they're kind of tweeners to me. And I see risk for them specifically. Not so much the BMWs, the Audis, the Porsches, and the Mercedes, but the brands under them that will compete more directly with the Chinese brands. So,
yeah.
Well, the other thing that we should talk about, Lei, is maybe the EV100. What did you get from the EV100?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that because I didn't pay too much attention over the weekend. I was a little bit jet lagged, to be honest. But the only thing I'll say was at least the recent events at this type of event, it's always a venue to kind of see the brotherhood of these smart EV startups. And I think there was that video of William Lee sitting next to He Xiaopeng, yeah, talking about William being the ambassador for the X9 and He Xiaopeng giving him a personal 50% discount. I mean, these are the things,
yes,
you kind of love to see, but at the same time, it's also marketing for their own purpose, right? You know, aside from the bloodbath, it's nice to see. But then there's these silent dunkings, I think, whenever you have these CEOs speak at these public events. So I think He Xiaopeng dropped the Mona bomb. And then if I remember, Yu Chengdong, which is the Huawei guy, he's like, well, He Xiaopeng, Xpeng, you might be in the lead in the smartification, autonomous driving, but we're going to surpass you. I think that's what he basically said. Other than that, I don't know, any particular interesting sights and sounds you picked up?
Yeah, so same things. I think Huawei also said that they would be profitable, and which is a bit surprising to me, to be quite frank. But yeah, the social media post by Li Bin and He Xiaopeng, you know, and this also was the opportunity for Wang Chuanfu and Tim Cook to have a photo op, because a reminder to the people that do not know or remember, BYD has had a long-standing relationship with Apple before the car days. So that shouldn't be a surprise to see them together.
Yeah, I think it's still a surprise to a lot of people. Like, what the heck does BYD have to do with Apple, right?
So the crazy thing is, Lei, is that you look at those two people, they control two of the most influential companies probably of this century. And they are the most unassuming CEOs you've ever seen, because they have to be two of the top 10 in the world. Now, it's still early innings for AI, but up until 2024, BYD and Apple probably have made, and a Tesla, who else? What other companies could we name? And the X maybe have really been the most influential to their sectors in the last.
NVIDIA.
Yeah, NVIDIA. You know, yeah, right. Yep. Yeah. So, and then NVIDIA had its GTC, which is their global technology conference. And friend of the show, Maxwell Zhou, was a presenter at GTC yesterday, I want to say. Maxwell Zhou is the CEO of DeepRoute. And it looks like NVIDIA is full steam ahead, man. They seem to be the company for the next 25 years. And I think there was a little sour grapes because NVIDIA seems to be the one that is also favored by the Chinese EV companies. And
they were, companies.
Yeah, they were saying that how come Intel and Qualcomm aren't favored by NVIDIA? And so that's a little bit of sour grapes. The other thing that I wanted to mention to contrast what you were saying, you would not see a selfie or a short video that had Zuckerberg and Tim Cook in it, that had Tim Cook and Elon Musk in it, that had Elon Musk and Mary Barra. You would just never see that. So to your point, I think there's a healthy respect between each of the Chinese EV makers. They want to crush them in business, but I think there's a healthy respect between all of them. Maybe Wang Chuanfu is probably the odd man out, but Wang Chuanfu is also the elder statesman of this group of people. He toiled and toiled for years, for 20, 25 years before making BYD what it is. And so most of these other CEOs are technology CEOs and founders. And so they just have a different type of vibe and how they use social media to their advantage. So,
yeah. And I just remembered one of the headlines from the China EV 100 was Wang Chuanfu saying that within the next 3 months, you'll see EV penetration reaching 50% in China. And I think CPCA just came out with the early numbers for March, expecting that take rate to be 45.5%, which is record high for a monthly take rate.
This is not only for the sake of watching NEV growth in China. It's also looking at how fast ICE rate is declining. And remember, for the past 35 years, who's dominated in the ICE space? It's the foreign automakers. And so as ICE sales fall off a cliff, there's more risk for a Volkswagen, a General Motors, a Toyota. And so it's also important to remember that as NEV sales increase to 45%, we're going to see a proportionate amount of ICE sales decline, okay? Generally speaking, right? I'm making general statements. There could be a couple percentage points difference, but because of the used car market and things like that. So we have to remember that. So Oakland Golden Grizzlies is a university in Michigan that both my brothers went to. And so Oakland is like a small school. It's not a big school. So it's a huge upset. But let's open the room up if anybody has any questions. And then I will look at my trusty newsletter that I sent out today to see what else that we can talk about. I'm reading Burn Book Lay by Kara Swisher. I think it's a good read. I recommend that.
Oh.
And then the Biden administration has revamped its carbon emissions and EV sales requirements for the U.S. automakers to now push out the stiff requirements of BEVs and now are including PHEVs. Okay. And I actually don't think that's really going to help. That actually is not going to have the intended consequences. Now, the one thing I did want to ask you is that the Indian government now seems to be softening its stance about importing vehicles, electric vehicles, into the Indian market. Now, do you think the details are you can import 8,000 cars a year as long as you commit to investing $500 million. And that $500 million needs to be invested before the third year. And if you invest more than that, you can incrementally increase the number of imports by a little bit. So 8,000 is not a lot. It's less than 1% of Shanghai Giga's capacity. But my question to you actually is, how far gone is the Indian-Chinese relationship? Do you see anyone, with the exception of one company you and I know of, that is Chinese that would have the capital to be able to invest and actually might be looking at the Indian market as an export market and manufacturing hub with those requirements in mind?
It's hard to say. I don't know if it, you know, I think this would be good for Tesla, obviously. I don't know. Like India as a hub is, it's just not on the map. It's not as clear or as strong of a attractive location given the current environment as it is in Southeast Asia.
Sure. Well, so I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because in 2022, India became the fourth largest market in the world from a country standpoint. So we always talk about Europe as a kind of a place, right? But it's a region. It's a region with 27 countries. And if we look at the largest market by country, it used to be the United States. It used to be China, the United States, Japan, Germany, and then India. India jumped to both Japan and Germany and is now number three at 4.3 million units. That's miles away from the United States and miles away from China. But back in the envelope calculations, and 8,000 units a year is not going to do anything to Tesla's sales numbers. But, you know, if they come out with a $25,000 car, are able to build it in India, ship it to Singapore, ship it to, you know, it might be more practical. Because at the end of the day, like, if we get into the 45%, 50%, 55% take rates in China, that 1.2 million, 2 million units can conceivably be, for 1.2 to 2 million units in Shanghai could conceivably domestically be consumed, okay? That's barring any politics or and assuming that Tesla continues to launch new vehicles in the market, right? So that's why I think that the Indian market is actually kind of a huge, has huge potential for them, okay? And it's a counterweight, right? Because if there's any challenges in the Chinese market, at least they can kind of dial up the India, the Gujarat Giga, maybe. So
I'm just seeing this statistic given out by one of the OEM presidents. He said, this is a very interesting statistic that we've never kind of calculated this way. He said that in 2023, there were 403 NEV models on sale in China. And if you break out, if you break it out in terms of average sales per month, it's only 1,500 per month. that's crazy. There's too many models, and there's more coming. So basically, this is 403 multiplied by 1,500, or you know, let's say 7-8 million vehicles divided by these models and divided by 12, I guess, to get to the average monthly sales. It's crazy. That's why, you know, going back to the earlier topic on Omega, it's very difficult to have a blockbuster model, let's say a single model that's taking significant sales. I think the only model I would say, I think Wuling Hongguang Mini EV would be one of those blockbuster models in the early days of the pandemic, like 40, 50,000 units a month, one model, right? But it's very difficult to have this, I mean, this environment to have a single model that sells in the, you know, that type of sales range volume.
Well, you could say the Model Y is the only car that does that. And that would be globally because it's the best-selling vehicle, you know, 1.3 million units, I want to say, last year. So that's that. So Tesla should be applauded for that, number one. Number two, I don't know of any Chinese brand right now that could get to 1.3 million units globally in the next 5 years, not with any current vehicles that they have. So, and remember, the Model Y is not a $20,000 car, so that makes it even more impressive, right?
Yeah, And then I think Postones, not Postdog, Postones, came out with a statement saying that, you know, the media reports that the sales were zero was wrong. I think they put out a statement saying basically so far in the first 2 months, they sold like 2,500 units.
It's not zero, but it's not.
It's not zero, but.
It's better than zero.
It's not that much, right? It's better than zero, but it's not that much. Hanging in there.
Well, that kind of makes your point, right? There's just too many of these vehicles and brands that sell next to nothing every month. So, yeah.
And they still survive. That's the paradox.
Well, did you see that there's two brands that are going to be revived in which province? There's a brand that there's a couple of brands that are being revived by the provincial governments, and Xi Jinping had a speech about it.
Well, I have to look it up.
Zhido electric vehicles.
Well, Zhido we talked about in last episode, right? We already talked about it.
The other one was Haima. So those two brands are being revived. So
yeah, Haima used a contract manufacturer for.
Was it XPeng?
Was it XPeng? Was it in the early days?
And was it Ford? Well, maybe not Ford, but anyways.
And just looking ahead, we're just about a little bit more than a month until Auto China 2024, or the good old Beijing Auto Show. And the last time I was there was 2018. And the last time you were there was 2020.
Yep,
you did go, right? It was a kind of a toned down, tempered down.
Yeah, it was
September Auto China, so
it was ghetto. It was not worth going. So
I think this will be interesting because, I mean, it's been 6 years. I can't believe it's been 6 years since I've attended.
Even more of our friends from around the world are going to be joining this time too. So hopefully, it'll be nice to see them.
Yeah, and then next week I'll be checking out the New York Auto Show because they will make that final announcement on the World Car of the Year Award, and the BYD CEO is a top three finalist.
Well deserved.
It'll be very interesting. I think it will shock the world if it wins the first time that a Chinese car.
That will make it official about China EV Inc.
Yeah. Yeah,
taking the global stage. So,
yeah.
Hey, man, I'm going to send you some pictures of me getting fatter every day. And then I'll catch you on DMs when my phone signal works. All right. Everyone, thanks for joining us. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. We'll talk with you all next week.
Likewise. Bye-bye. And talk to you next week.
That brings us to the end of this week's show. Lei and I thank you for tuning in. My name is Tu Li. And you can find me on Twitter at Sino Auto Insight. That's SinoAutoInsight. You can find Lei on Twitter at LeiXing77. That's LeiXing77. If you wouldn't mind rating and or reviewing us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you grab your podcast from, we'd appreciate that as well. Even better, if you enjoy this show, please tell your friends about it. Please join us again next week as we track down all the latest news on China, EVs, and more.